Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, I am excited to start the year with this one.
Hey man, this is going to be a lot of fun. We have with us owner and CEO with the Joe Soto Project, the man himself, Joe Soto. How are you, man?
Hey, Stone, thanks for inviting me today, man. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Well, before we get too far into things, Joe, tell us about the Joe Soto Project. How are you serving folks?
All right. So the Joe Soto Project was actually an initiative that I started to educate the masses on financial information. So here's the thing, right? If the average consumer is going to have a tough time having access to quality financial advice. Hate to say it, but that's just the way it is. So the majority of financial advisors today, unfortunately, do not have a legal obligation to act in your best interest. There was a rule in 2018 that was repealed by that was passed by the Department of Labor, and then it was repealed last year. So the majority of consumers don't know this. And, you know, I was talking to a buddy of mine, and he said, look, Joe, so what if your mom had some money and she went to look for some help? And I said, man, I got to do something about this. And, you know, I'm like, I launched the Joe Soto Project. And, I was telling Stone, I'm a practicing financial planner. I've been doing that for a long time. And I didn't just wake up one day and say, I'm going to start educating people. Like, you know, some of these folks out here writing books and stuff, they don't have any clients. They never practice. They're not licensed. So I said, you know what? I'm going to provide a forum for the average consumer. And by average consumer, you're gonna laugh at this, but the target market for most of Wall Street is $25 million and above.
Oh, I'm not laughing. I'm crying because I'm coming in a little under that. How about you, Lee?
Yeah, I think so.
Elizabeth, I work in the machine. Okay, so we're all in here. So you see what I'm saying? The majority of people that we can relate to that we know are do not fall in that category. So I'm like, okay. So when they show up to the marketplace, are they showing up equipped with the tools and the resources necessary for them to make an educated decision? And unfortunately, I would say the majority of people today, Stone, do not have access to that information. So the Joe Soto Project was born, and I'm currently working on a course right now called Wall Street Secrets. This thing is going to be super inexpensive. I'm seriously not trying to get rich off of this thing, Stone. I'm creating this course strictly to educate people to have access to information on demand. And then I also have the Joe Soto Project, the podcast. Just started that as well. It's called the Joe Soto Project, Financial Education with a Twist. And it's just that. It's just, you know, having fun about the topic of finance and making it accessible to, you know, the common folk, Stone.
Now, when you say the common folk, I'm assuming you're saying people that make under 25 or have less than $25 million worth of assets.
Yeah. So can I tell you guys a funny story real quick? So this is a true story. Okay. So yesterday. All right. So help me out here. There's lights flashing here. Everything's all good, right?
You're good.
I saw some on air light that came on. I'm going to make sure I'm on point. Anyway, so I was cooking breakfast yesterday and I just got this epiphany that hit me. I said, okay. I'm originally from New Orleans. For your audience who's like, where the heck is this guy from? Where's that accent? So I'm originally from New Orleans. This is where the accent comes from. And they have a neighborhood supermarket down there. It's called Rouse's. I don't know if they have it in Florida or not, Stone, but so it's called the neighborhood supermarket. Okay. So I want you to think about this for a minute because this is a great example I came up with, yesterday. And so think about it. It's at the neighborhood supermarket, but think about all three of us here walk into the supermarket and there's someone waiting for you in the front that says, good morning, Stone. How are you doing today, sir? Welcome to our Rouse's, our neighborhood supermarket. How much money are you planning on spending today? You're like, wait a minute. I think I came just to pick up, you know, XYZ. Mm-hmm. No, sir. I need you to tell me how much money you plan on spending today before you walk into the supermarket. And depending on how much money you bring to the table and you commit to, it's going to depend the type of access that you have available when it comes to the supermarket. And unfortunately, my friends, this is what's happening today in the landscape of the financial services industry.
So now you're saying that people who have more money have access to more things to invest in?
Yes, yes. Now, hold on a second, because I think I know where you're going with this. Now, I'm big into market segmentation and understanding how to service different people at different levels. Okay, I'm not against that. What I'm against is, don't call it the neighborhood supermarket.
So that's what the financial advisors are making it seem like. Anybody gets access to all these things, but in reality, they're getting kind of pigeonholed into a couple of different funds, and then they're calling it a day.
Boom.
But they're still charging high fees for that kind of...
Ooh, this guy right here, man. You're on top of it. And here's the sad part, right? So in 2018, they had this law that passed. And hopefully you don't have too many financial advisors on listening to the to the show. You'd be like, who's that guy, man? He's revealing the secrets. Hey, guys, you know I'm telling the truth here. So in 2018, they passed this law, making it a law for pretty much the entire industry to act on the client's best interest. It was called the Department of Labor, DOL, Best Interest Rule. That rule was repealed, okay? And when that rule was repealed, what it meant was that the disclosure of letting people know, hey, the supermarket is not fully accessible to everybody. Mm-hmm. And the Joe Soto Project has a problem with that.
So now, are you saying then that at one point these advisors had some sort of fiduciary responsibility in terms of they had to be looking out for the best interest of their clients, and now they have less of a fiduciary responsibility?
They don't have to be fiduciaries no more.
So now, but if they say they are, then they are, or they can kind of fudge that a little.
Ooh, great question. So I wrote on here. I look. For anybody who follows me after this show, I am going to send them the written promise that I give my clients as a fiduciary in terms of what does a fiduciary promise look like. So the consumer, because people, like, I mean, let's talk about this for a second. People don't know what a fiduciary is. Majority of people don't know. They don't even know what to ask. So can you think about going to a doctor and his incentives being tied to the number of surgeries that he does? Or the number of prescriptions that he writes? It shouldn't be like that in the financial industry.
So now, you recommend them, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but nope. That would be a question to ask your financial advisor.
Oh,
that should one. Be pretty quickly in the relationship. You should find out where the incentives lie, and if they do have fiduciary responsibility.
Oh man, that you know what? If people can get one thing from me today, and by the way, don't just ask. You know, some of my attorney friends, they said, Joe, if it's not in writing, it doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. So don't just ask. Get it in writing. Mm-hmm. Get it in writing. Get that commitment. Get that promise. Because if not, then you really have no. You're limited in terms of the protections that you have as a consumer. I would say you have a whole lot more protections when you deal with somebody who has a legal obligation to, which is in your best interest, somebody who doesn't.
Now, where does kind of fee-only advice come in?
So fee-only advice is, again, in line with the fiduciary standard. Fee-only advice, you know, there's different definitions on that, because you have the CFP board, they have one definition of that, and then the rest of the industry has another definition of that. I can give you my perspective on what I think fee-only is, okay? Fee-only is you do not charge people based on transactional business, mm-hmm. Okay? So you know, if every time I buy and sell something to you, I make money, I have a conflict of interest.
Right.
That I need to disclose to you up front in terms of how I do my business.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If I am a fee-only advisor, I can make 100 trades in an account and the client still is going to pay the same percentage that they pay,
mm-hmm.
which is really how I run my personal practice.
So now when you're working with your clients, walk me through what that initial kind of onboarding looks like. Are they coming? You, I would imagine your clients are coming to you because they had a financial advisor and now they're moving to you rather than they've never had one, but maybe that's incorrect.
Great. That's a great question. So I would say the majority of clients that I meet have already an existing relationship. Every now and then I'll run into someone who maybe was doing it all themselves and then decide finally to hire the help of a financial planner or a financial advisor. Here's the thing. I have a process in my practice where it doesn't matter who it is. Before a client spends $1 with me, I'm going to develop for them a written financial plan. Now, I spent, well over a decade, working for some of the biggest Wall Street firms, and people used to call me for the purposes of radio and keeping it, polished, not intelligent for doing that. Mm-hmm. And I always felt like if I was going to a financial plan, I would want to see what they can do first.
Right.
And I wanted them to show me value. And believe it or not, man, I'm really proud of that process that I've developed. So I develop a written financial plan for every person that walks through my door. I give them the results of the plan. And people say, Joe, you're not afraid that they're going to take that work and take it somewhere else? I'm like, look, if I'm dealing with that type of person, like, I don't know if I want to work with that person for the next 20, 30 years.
Right.
So it's okay if they leave. Well, 85% of the people that I take through that process, they become clients.
So now the process, what is it, the same process for everybody? Everybody gets the same questionnaire to fill out? Or is it something that you see, okay, your goals are the ABC, so you get the ABC financial plan, or yours is DEF, so you get a different plan?
Yeah, great question. So every individual is different. So the financial plan should be customized to every individual. So every plan that I have is different than the next plan.
Right. It's not a choose cookie from cutter. These three menu items, and then that's the category you fall into.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Which is one of the other reasons why I left, the big machine, because it was kind of like, either you fall into these four widgets or, that's the way you got to do it because we say so. So, every person has a customized plan with their own custom needs. Obviously a person who, may have, $500,000 in investable asset, their situation may be totally different than someone who has $10 million. Mm-hmm. They have different situations, different opportunities, and different type of risk. But here's my thing. My job is to let the client know, this is everything you have access to. This is what I recommend, and this is why. But at the end of the day, I always tell my clients this. You're the CEO, I'm the CFO. So, I came up, I had some great mentors, and I had some mentors that were not the greatest. And the mentors that I had that were the best, they led their clients. And then I had some mentors that were also very successful that ran their business like a dictator, And that wasn't really my style. I know a little bit about finance, right? I know a little bit about financial planning. I've been around the block, but at the end of the day, I see myself as like an everyday guy helping everyday people.
Mm-hmm. So now, what are some of the components of a financial plan? You mentioned the word risk a minute ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people think, oh, I take risks. And then if you ask them, well, okay, if you lost 30% of your net worth tomorrow, are you still good with that? And then they would say, no, I don't want to ever do that. And it's like, well, then it's hard to have really take risk if you're not willing to put the money actually on the line. So how do you kind of discern if they really can handle the ups and downs of the volatility of the market as opposed to they say they can?
Man, let me tell you, that is a phenomenal question. One that I did not submit, by the way. I don't think I submitted that question. So that's a phenomenal question. Let me tell you why that question is important. A rising tide lifts all boats. A lot of people comfortable right now. A lot of people feel really good.
They have a good system.
Yes.
Their system is killing it right now.
They're doing well, man.
It's like Mike Tyson said, everybody has a good plan until they get punched in the face.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So look, I'll tell you this. I'll give a real life example. I'll come back and answer that question. So some people have called me and say, hey, Joe, market's up 25%. How come my portfolio is only doing this? Maybe he's up 10% on a moderate portfolio or something like that. Well, so this is part where the media doesn't really do us a good job educating us as consumers. which puts Wall Street in a position of advantage. It gives them an opportunity to do the right thing or take advantage of the situation. So the S&P 500 is one asset class out of 19. So if you are making the same amount of money as the S&P 500 right now, you got to remember that during a financial crisis, and I should probably throw some sort of disclosure in here because it's a radio show. I'm just, you know, past performance is not indicative of future results and all that other good stuff. But anyways, during the financial crisis, the S&P 500 was down over 50% in the middle of the financial crisis. It actually was down even a lot more than that, right between 50 and 60. So, I mean, look what happened with this stuff with Iran. I mean, who got the memo on that? You know, I mean, again, this is not a political thing. I'm just saying things happen. Okay. It could be that. It could be something else. So if something made 25%, then you got to recognize that, you know what? When the market is in a downturn, well, that thing is going to go down, you know, significantly. And if you had your money spread out amongst 19 different asset classes, then it would have dampened your risk significantly. Now, let me go back and address the question that you asked me about how this relates to clients' specific situations. This is so important. I can't tell you how many times I meet clients that say, Joe, listen, I'm not afraid to take risk. I want to shoot for the fences. Like, I'm young right now, by young, like mid-40s or whatever. I could take big risk. I said, okay. You know, they answer the questionnaire and it comes out risky. Most of the time what they say, they come out as, okay? Sometimes they say they're this, but then they come out as this. Sometimes when the market's making 25%, they forget that they're conservative and they want to be aggressive all of a sudden.
Right, they want to catch up.
Right. So here's the thing. The return on a portfolio, including the risk on the portfolio, should be driven by the client's investment objectives.
Right.
Okay? So if a client can reach 100% of their goals, taking 20% less risk, whatever the percentage is, if they can reach 100% of their goals by taking less risk, which that's what the financial plan is for. It's data. Okay. So when that happens, then you can start now making educated decisions about the risk that you're taking for the reward that you're getting. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I tell clients that, look, for a lot less risk, we can still fund 100% of your goals. Here's the statistics. Here's the data. Do you still want to take 20% more risk for, you know, a half of 1% more? Wow, Joe, I didn't know that. So it's all relative to the plan. And another thing is, you know, a lot of times, you know, in the finance industry, people call themselves financial planners, financial advisors, and they use the financial plan as a sales tool. And, you know, if anything, you know, for me, it's the backbone of the relationship.
Right, because then you know what true north is. You know where they're trying to go. Otherwise, yeah, you're just kind of just whatever the mood the market's in, that's what you want, more of that or less of that. And that's not a really good way to kind of manage your money, I wouldn't think.
Wait, would you just say gave me goosebumps on my arms? Let me tell you why it gave me goosebumps on my arms. Because it's okay when the weather's sunny and the sea is calm. But man, when that sea starts to go the opposite direction and the ship gets hit with 100-mile-an-hour storm, and then the rafts start coming out and they're like, we're under severe weather. You expect the financial planner to be keeping their hands on the wheel, on what, you know, whatever you call that on a boat. You can think about that Italian guy that kind of built the build out on that cruise ship. You remember that? He jumped off and left her.
That's not a good financial planner, right?
But listen, this is one of the things that why I'm so big on this. And this is why I want to tell people, okay? You're not demanding the moon here. This should be the standard. Mm-hmm. The only reason it's not the standard is because, I don't know, that's bigger than my pay grade, okay? But for as an average consumer, when you show up to the marketplace, there's certain things and expectations that you need to know to demand and ask.
And then a good place to ask for that is at the Joe Soto Project. Can you tell people where they can find out more information from you?
Absolutely. So look, I think the podcast is about to go. I think I'm going to be on iTunes. I'm already on Spotify right now. I'm going to be available pretty much in all the major, podcast places, but like Spotify, it's a, It's, you know, a very popular one. I do it through anchor.fm, so you can also go there. It's called the Joe Soto Project. That's simple. Financial education with a twist. Also, you can follow me. I normally do 4 different pieces of education per day on Instagram and Facebook at hashtag The Joe Soto Project or at The Joe Soto Project. And, you know, look out for that. You know, I'm working on a course right now. It's going to be, listen, you know, I know this is going to sound cheesy and corny, but for me, this is how I'm giving back to the community. Because the financial industry has been good to me. And, you know, I just think that, you know, one of my mentors taught me a long time ago, there's only one way that you can fill a full cup, and you got to pour it out. You got to pour it out and give back so you can make more space to receive more. And I just think, I don't know, I would feel like a fraud if I didn't do what I'm doing right now.
And then, so the Joe Soto Project can be found on most podcasting channels. Is there a website yet, or you're in the process of putting a website together?
Right, right. So, yeah, the website is called the Joe Soto Project, without the D, probably. It's called the JoeSotoProject.com. It's under construction. I got a course that I'm building there. It's called Wall Street Secrets that, you know, I'm probably halfway through that course right now. Again, I'm going to make this super accessible, just mainly just to cover the cost of the course. But you know, it's a work in progress. I was hoping to have it done by the end of the year, but you know, family and other obligations took over, you know, with the holidays.
All right. Good stuff. Well, thank you so much, Joe, for sharing your story today.
Hey guys, I appreciate the time and, thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.